The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsense.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939. This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Well, the recovery trade continues this week, helped by speculation and confirmation that President-elect Biden is pushing for a $1.9 trillion spending plan as he laid the grounds Thursday for his call to action. As we have seen since November, normally this kind of talk has seen the value in cyclical stocks just rocket. And as we saw when the Democrats won two seats in the Senate in Georgia this month, we've seen that take place. The issue, however, is that many aspects of the plan will require 60 votes, not the 50 that the Democrats have. Secondly, there are some misgivings about what the payback will look like for the plan, as in higher taxes down the road. Now, energy continued to perform this week on that news, with a handful of Wall Street firms upgrading the producers like Exxon, ConocoPhillips, Marathon Oil, Occidental Petroleum, and Chevron. Exxon especially, due to its weight and a number of upgrades that it received this week, helped the group out the most. The sector continues to just react really well to the adjustments made last week by OPEC and Saudi Arabia's specific cut of 1 million barrels. On the flip side of performers this week, the communications sector was hit at the beginning of the week due to concerns over harsher regulatory actions as a result of Facebook and Twitter's restriction on President Trump, in addition to a continued rise in interest rates that seems to continue to plague the growth stocks, and we continue to see that rotation out of growth stocks into value cyclical stocks. The other sector hit this week by rising rates are the sensitive staples, utilities, and real estate sectors. Month to date, as I just take a look here to see how the sectors are developing, energy is up 17.3% for the month. Wow. Financials are up 6.7% on obviously higher interest rates and the vaccine and the recovery. Materials are up 5.6. Discretionary is up 3.9. Healthcare up 2.8. And industrials here are up about 1.6%. Now, communications is down the most due to mainly this week's action, obviously, as a result of the possible regulatory changes that might occur as a result of the moves that they've made this week. But also, staples were down 2.3%. Real estate was down 2.1%. Technology down 1%. And utilities down 0.5% to round out the lot. It's interesting to see that technology was down this month so far 1%, while the news has been hot surrounding chip stocks. Micron's stellar earnings January 7th were followed up by Taiwan Semiconductor this week. And looking there, earnings per share were up 23% year over year. Revenues grew 22% year over year. And revenues grew sequentially over the month 4.4%. Their chips for smartphones, which is half of their revenues, were up 13% in the fourth quarter, likely due to Apple's rollout of its 5G phones. And with the report from Nikkei last month that Apple is obviously looks great for Taiwan Semiconductor. Also this week in the chip space was Intel's announcement, I thought it was interesting news, of their appointment of Pat Gelsinger as the new CEO starting February 15th. Now, the former CEO of VMware for 8 years, Pat Gelsinger, previously said no to the appointment, and this time around is saying yes. He was also, at one point, the chief technology officer at Intel. Now, the change is speculated as a result of Intel's production troubles with its new 7-nanometer chip and falling sales in its data center group. The stock was up 7% on the news, and we also saw a drop in its competitor, AMD, on this news. Despite the overall weakness in the technology sector this month, which is down 1%, the Philadelphia Semiconductor Index is up 9.3%. Now, in the economic news this week, initial claims spiked up 181,000 claims to 965,000. Obviously, not a very good sign. The highest since August. Retail sales for December were a bummer, declining 0.7% in December, probably due to expiring benefits, weakening confidence overall, just due to COVID, and then, of course, these specific restrictions related to a worsening trend in COVID cases. We got the inflationary numbers this week for December, something traders obviously in long-term bonds are worried about as we continue to see interest rates rise. CPI was up 0.4% month over month to a rate of 1.4% year over year, while core inflation rose 0.1% to a year over year pace of 1.2% for a third straight month at that rate. While inflation at the producer level in the producer price index, the PPI, shows inflation has been in check, up only 0.3% in December, putting the year-over-year reading at about 1.2%, Fed Chairman Powell reiterated this week in his speech Thursday that a rate hike will not be considered for a very long time. And last I checked, looking at the 2-year Treasury and the 10-year Treasury spread, it's right around 95 basis points. We have seen the 10-year yield pare back a little bit of its gains towards the end of the week here. Finally, as we're talking about interest rates here, the financials began the earnings season Friday with Citigroup, Wells Fargo, and JP Morgan Chase reporting. All three beat on earnings, but Wells Fargo and Citigroup missed on revenue expectations. The group has been really on fire since the news of the vaccine hit markets in November, with investors pocketing some of those profits, I would say, on Friday on those earnings news. And that's it for this week. Chris Paplava and I will discuss the macro and technical setups early in the week, like we have been for the past couple of months on the website video section, as well as on the Financial Sense YouTube channel. So obviously go over there, take a look, and subscribe to know when those are available. Like I said, we've been trying to get those out every single week early in the week. Then with the earnings season kicking off, we'll have just a full week of earnings to report after Martin Luther King Day when the markets are closed on Monday for you next time.
This week, we caught up with Mark Chandler, the chief market strategist at Bannockburn Global, to get his big picture macro view of the U.S. dollar. Here's a clip of what he had to tell listeners on FS Insider this week.
So in the big picture, here's where I think we are. I think that the dollar was in a big uptrend for many years. That uptrend was the third significant dollar rally since the end of Bretton Woods in 1971. And how I would frame it, this leg down the dollar, this broader leg, is going to be characterized by twin deficits. So the dollar has to act as a bit of a shock absorber.
If you want to listen to this full interview, go to financialsense.com and click the subscribe button.
If you're seeking financial advice and how to invest in today's markets, Financial Sense Wealth Management can help. From setting up or providing advice on 401k plans, managing corporate cash balances in a zero interest rate environment, to helping individuals, foundations, and businesses achieve their financial goals. Give Financial Sense Wealth Management a call today at 888-486-3939. Financial Sense Wealth Management has been named as one of the top investment advisory firms in the U.S. by the Financial Times. Let us put our financial expertise to work for you. Call now at 888-486-3939 or email grow at financialsense.com. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Well, Happy New Year, everyone. Once again, as we begin our second forecast show of the year, but before we get to that, we're going to look at the stock market. It's hitting new records. Will this continue, or will we hit into bear territory or a correction? Let's find out. Joining us on the program is Basil Chapman. And Basil, you sent me some material prior to the show. But when you're looking at these markets, and you and I were talking before we went on the air, if our listeners were probably watching the news over the last 12 months with the riots, the looting, the COVID, the shutdowns, all the turmoil, you wouldn't expect to see the market where it stands today, which is at record levels. So let's talk about that.
Correct. So if one listens to the news, and that could be general news. It could even be based on listening to business news. There is a certain, can I call it a patina that starts to develop. And if you keep hearing bad news, you expect that it's going to be reflected in the stock market. After all, if things are not good, why would the stock market move up? So I always suggest that it's better to just do your homework, have your own instincts. People actually have very good instincts, but they get persuaded by people they think are much more educated than them. So they get dissuaded from what they would do. So my overall contention is that if you are an investor, and there are certain things that you like a lot, certain stocks, and you've followed them for years, a good opportunity is going to be coming very soon. If you've seen some of those stocks that have quadrupled and gone even higher, and you've missed the boat on some of them, right now is a period, especially in the tech sector, where I think the tech sector is going to, when we were on last year, I said at some point later in the year, I think that the tech sector is going to start to slow down. And finally, we'll see the IWM, the small caps, and the Russell 2000, that is, and the MDY, which is the mid-cap stock sector, start to move higher. And we might even see something in the energy, although I was a little suspicious because oil, once you've got alternate energy sources, that once they start to accelerate, as we're seeing in the battery manufacturing and the battery, the longevity of the batteries, that's going to at some point affect oil, crude oil, that is. So this is actually a really exciting period. And if you look at all the different century changes, if you look at the 1680s going to the early 1700s, if you look at the late 1780s when you had the French Revolution and you can see it in music when you went from Haydn to Beethoven to Schubert and Chopin into the 1800s, when you went from Stravinsky and Bartok in the late 1880s into the turn of the century. Every century creates something that's completely different. And as the century turns, when it goes from the automobile engine to automobiles, when it goes from electricity to something more major than that, there's a big change for the structure for 50, 60 years or more for that century. And we've seen that happen here with technology. So that big turn that we saw going into 2000, into 2010, into the teens, now we've got to the maturity stage. And now we're going to see the development of the technology as it's used in these various forms. So I think this is a very exciting phase. But just if I'm talking stock market on the very short term, almost all the charts that I'm looking at, if I'm looking at the Dow, the S&P, the NDX 100, the QQQ, that is, if I'm looking at the semiconductor index, the XLK, which is the S&P Select Spider ETF, what I'm looking at is, except for the IWM, the Russell 2000, and to a certain extent, the mid-caps, the MDY, the others are starting to get a little toppy. So it's not going to take, everything's priced right now to perfection in the very short term. So any disappointment in anything that's stated perhaps is more of a social program coming out from the new incoming administration. Maybe the market's just got a little over, just the expectations are a little high. So we've just got to be prepared that there could be some pullback. So when you ask the question about, people listening to the news and saying, what and how on earth? I mean, anyone in the middle age who's middle age or older has been, that I've spoken to for at least a year, just shakes their head side to side and says, what's going on? Why is this market doing what it's doing? What it's doing, because there's this maturity of products that have gotten to the stage where they're being implemented, like Zoom. We're on Zoom right now. Was there Zoom just a couple of years ago? There was nothing like it. And now all of a sudden, people around the world are having this face-to-face time. So there's a new technology, and you've got to be ready that other things. That's why the General Motors, an old-style automobile company, is doing well, because they're talking about electric vehicles. So I think that's the exciting, very exciting part. In fact, I've been talking for at least 10 years that we're probably going to go into some kind of replication of the 1920s. The only thing missing will be jazz, because not that many people play jazz, although jazz is the American art form that is culturally just goes around the world. So it's, I think we're coming into an era when the COVID starts to ameliorate and people get out, they're going to want to go to concerts. They're going to want to dance again. So I think this could be a very exciting period. Just shorter term, I'm a little cautious.
All right. Well, let's take a look at another side of the market, and that is the bond market. It's hard to believe, Basil, that I think it was last August we were down to 0.5% on the 10-year Treasury, and we got down to almost 1% on 30-year bonds. As I look at the charts today, the 10-year is over 1%. They're expecting it could hit 1.25, 1.5 this year. The 30-year is approaching 2. It's expected to go over that. What's your take as you read the charts on interest rates?
So this is an area that I do purely technically. So the repercussions, implications, I can see it when I'm looking at the different sectors like the housing market, etc. But what is very interesting is for those of us who knew 16-17% mortgage rates back in the 80s, even this bump up is just a blip compared to anything that's close, even if they get 7 or 8%, and we're not nearly even close to that. So the 10-year, the TNX, trading at 11.29 or 1.129%, it made, in my work, the fourth highest peak. I alphabetize each peak, and it can go all the way to peak A, next is B, C, D, E, F, and G. But the fourth highest peak, peak D, is where other things can happen. Well, the 10-year daily chart has gone to this peak D. It just stopped there, just under 12 or 1.2, and it's holding at this level. My thinking here, and if you look at WOOD, which is WOOD, which is the ETF for the I'm just getting it up right now. It's trading at 81.39, just off its high, and its all-time high was back in the 83, 88 area back in June of 2018. This is the Timber and Forestry ETF, global Timber and Forestry ETF. It's pretty much at all-time highs. And if you look at high-grade copper, so to answer a little bit roundabout, but if I answer your question technically, high-grade copper has broken out. It's gone from down at 2 to 3.6 right now, and it's at the highs, most recent highs. So that's telling me that the global markets are actually doing much better than what you would hear on the news. Copper is part of the business world, part of the economic world, part of the construction world. So that's very important. And at the same time, so is lumber and timber. And the EEM, which is the global market, is also trading way off the low. It was down at 30 in March, and now it's up at 55. So this is saying to me that there's been economic recovery. And if you want to see economic recovery, you want to see a demand for bonds. So that says to me that the yields are actually a good thing right now. Perhaps if they go too far, too fast, that's going to impact the market. But all I can say is I'm watching them closely, and the HGX, which is the Philadelphia Housing Index, it was way down at about 100. I think it was at about 165. Let me check. 175 back in March, trading now at 400, 396 to 400. That's good action, and that's just saying to me that there has been an economic recovery, and that says to me also that whatever the Biden plan is going to be, if they are looking at other figures, they might have a misinterpretation of what's going on, because in fact there has been an economic recovery, and what maybe they have to deal with is the terrible aspect of restaurants closing down, everything that people go to, concerts, etc. The music world's just been devastated, the arts world, the entertainment. So it's going to be kind of tricky, I think, how they get out of this. But to answer your question, I think higher rates are not bad. If they go too high, that'll be a problem.
All right, let's move to another area. And I want to talk about commodities and then also the relationship of commodities such as precious metals. You mentioned copper, nickel, and then the dollar, because we've seen a big drop in the dollar going back from last March. to where it is now. We've got a little bit of a rally going on. But what's your take on the dollar first, and then let's move into commodities?
So I have to have, there's a confession I must make. We, for my subscribers to my opening call, my daily newsletter, we had the dollar, we bought the dollar perfectly back in April of 2018 at about 90. Ran it up all the way based on the looking at higher peaks and counting those peaks and assessing them and grading them. And went all the way in the monthly chart to a leg E at 102.99. At that point, I said, economically, I'm treating the dollar as the American icon, like the Harley Davidson. I'm talking about the company. I'm just talking about the icon around the world, like Louis Armstrong, like American icons that people in other countries look at America, and that's the thing that springs to mind, jazz. So the dollar to me seemed like it was an icon of our business acumen, how well America was doing. So I said, we want to just hold it. Anyone who wants to take profits, fine, but I'm just holding it kind of as an icon. Well, we watched it go down from 102.99 down to 98. It's now having a little bit of a bounce. Technically, we are still holding that, but certainly gave up almost all those great gains. But it's a different aspect. So I suspect that if the dollar really is going to pick up, and we don't know, you know, these are very subtle things. If the administration had, as the modus operandi, was to sell the dollar, I remember the period with Rubin, I think it was, who was talking about the higher dollar, the higher dollar, as the dollar kept going down. So you never know exactly what they're doing. But it seems to me that this is the administration. Regular folks, the mutual funds, these are countries. These are not people or funds that are doing it. Countries are selling the dollar and maybe buying the other currencies. So I think that's really what's going to – the only way that I will see the dollar rebound and be much stronger is if it can hold in the 94s, probably for 2 or 3 weeks, and here it is down in the 90 area. So yes, this is a bounce. Have to just treat it as a bounce. But if this economic recovery is for real, I wouldn't be surprised, once again, just as an icon, it's like this is not economics 101 or anything like, just as an icon, I think the dollar will rally, and we'll have to see. But in the meantime, yes, it's been a very serious decline from 103 down to the 90 area. How it rebounds is going to take, and it's going to have to be an administrative thing. If this administration decides they want a strong dollar, well, we'll start to see it. But otherwise, it's just a pop and a failure. So I'm watching it closely.
All right. Well, let's move on to commodities. And I want to talk about gold and silver, but also talk about cryptocurrencies. We saw Bitcoin move to 40,000, and then we saw it drop 20% in a single week. So let's talk about metals and cryptos.
So when we were on last year, I said, I see gold as being very important, but there was a chance that at some point, a little later in the year, we would see gold make some kind of a top and then go into a big consolidation, because the gold stocks had absolutely spectacular moves going to the high that was made in the summer back, I think, in the continuous contract. I think it was in August. I hit around about 2000, 2001, 100. So yes, it's been quite a decline, but it's been more time than price. What has impressed me is that in chart patterns, silver has had a much stronger move, in the sense that it's held much better. So I've always said that I consider gold to be more the fear factor for the world economies. People kind of rush to gold if there's anything that's looking, especially if anything's happening to the banking system, etc. But what also was interesting is that I also expected that at some point after the spectacular run that we had seen in Bitcoin, that Bitcoin would come back. So we were very fortunate. We did get a buy signal back in October for Bitcoin. And if you had said to me that Bitcoin itself would be going from the 14,000 area to 16,000 or 18,000, I would have said, that's a good move. But to go from that level to the most recent high at 42,700 was absolutely spectacular. So I'm thinking that is sort of a high level. So the fear factor that I was talking about, I think in a sense is a maturity. Bitcoin has gone from being an infant to a baby and then to a teenager. And now I think there's a certain maturity. I think now you've got some really big investors and now it's more mature. So I suspect that Bitcoin is in play for 2021. A chunk of the move in this particular part has been done. I think there'll be a consolidation, could go a little higher, but I wouldn't be surprised if over the next 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, we start to see lower highs and lower lows. And maybe somewhere, I'm just speculating right now, somewhere between 26,000 and 23,000, there's some kind of a base that's formed. And then maybe later in the year, we have another big move. So I think that this has become the more speculative area. And it's in a sense taken away from the luster of gold has gone to Bitcoin for the moment.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. How much of the gold market has the cryptocurrency eaten into? I know, like, for example, there's a lot of stories on Robinhood that, a lot of the millennials have gone to crypto versus gold.
So if we can just talk about the millennials for a moment, it was really important. We actually, for a few years now, you might recall that I've always spoken to you about what I consider to be a really important index and an indicator for me. And that is the IAI. And that is the iShares, the broker-dealer and securities ETF. And I followed this really closely, and it trades very lightly. So I treat it as an index, although we have people that are long, but that's not the issue. The issue is that it has led the market, and 3 days ago it made an all-time high. And that said to me that the whole area of the Robin Hooders, I actually wrote to you, I said, I think that the Robin Hooders are leaving Sherwood Forest. They're finally maturing themselves and starting to look at many other things. It took a long time for the millennials to get into the stock market. It was like, it was taboo. The stock market. But all of a sudden, they've seen that this is another way of earning income or adding to the income. And because of that, they've latched onto, we've seen stocks that have gone from $3 to $9 and then to $18 very quickly. So that becomes kind of a fad, and that worries me. But not what doesn't worry me is the fact that those Robinhooders are going to be very important participants in the general market. So the fact that they were perhaps influential to a certain extent, but it was also the Bitcoin that itself became very, the lure of Bitcoin was very important, but it was the maturity that you had. A lot of people that said they would never touch them, these were people that respected in the financial business, who said, hey, we are looking at it and we want to be part of this. So I think that that's part of it as well. But the most exciting thing, I believe, and you can see this in the IAI, is that there's a greater participation in the general public. And that's what was missing for years. Since 2010, I've been wondering, where's the public? I had never been at any gathering where people said, oh, you have something to do with the market, and then start talking stocks. Nobody spoke about stocks ever. And one of the problems I thought was, maybe it was political, because if you said you're in the stock market, they'd look at you as a capitalist, or you're a Republican, or you're whatever it is. I don't know what it is. But the fact is that now people are looking at it. And now I think it's a very important sector to be following. And yes, there will be these massive declines when people get too excited in any sector. But I think it's really important that you're getting a broadening of the spectrum of people who are following the market closer and closer, and people that are actually starting to not just trade, but to invest. So I like the fact that they did that. Yes.
So as we close here, Basil, from your perspective, looking at the charts, and once again, if you're looking at the charts, because if you looked at the evening news or watched the news, you probably wouldn't be in the stock market. You see this another good year for the stock market in 2021. Would that be correct in summing up?
I'm going to just twist that a little bit and say it's become a little more selective, that the old sectors and the old stocks are probably moving over. I think you've now changed. You're looking at, you've got to include the MJ, the cannabis sector. You've got to include the financials. I think this is the first time financials are really participating very well. You've got to include different parts of the energy. So this is the time to be way more selective in what you're looking at. And even though, for instance, XLE, the oil sector has run up a lot, if you look at it historically, it's just coming alive right now. So yes, I think that this is going to be a very exciting year, but I would not be surprised if at some point, and it could happen fairly soon, we just get stuck in a range, and that range will be quite volatile. But within that range, you'll suddenly see sectors that are just blooming and others are just not doing anything. So it's very selective, but I'm very excited about this year. Yes.
All right. Well, listen, Basil, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow your work, tell them how they could do so, please.
Well, two things. One is I have a newsletter, a daily newsletter called The Opening Call. And the other is I have an hour call-in show on Tiger Financial News Network, tfnn.com. And it's at noon Eastern time to 1 p.m. And in that, I cover whoever calls in. We go through whatever they're looking at. But every day, I go through the Dow, the S&P, the Qs, whatever is moving. We're looking at dollar, currencies, bonds, wheats. I mean, the grains have had a spectacular move. So, yes, I'd love for them to call in and just say, you heard it in the financial news, and here's the question. So go to tfnn.com, and you'll be able to find all the details there.
All right. Well, listen, have a happy new year. Stay safe and come back and talk again.
Thank you very much, Jim. I appreciate that. Have a great year and a happy year to you.
So what we have, and I talk about this in the New Great Depression, there's a huge gap between perception and reality. The perception is what you correctly described. You know, the S&P is at a new all-time high. But that blinds you to what's going on in the real economy, which completely ignores labor force participation. So what's the difference? In recent years, that has fallen from 70% to closer to 60%. Well, that's 10% of the labor force that's not in the labor force, not counted as unemployed. If you add those to the unemployment, then the unemployment rate is closer to 15%, not 8%, which they're reporting.
If you want to listen to this full interview, go to financialsense.com and click the subscribe button.
Everyone wants to retire well. That's not as easy as it sounds. You need to make the right investment choices, decide when to take Social Security, plan for taxes on your retirement income, and create a legacy for your family. To retire well, you need a roadmap to help you get there. Let Financial Sense Wealth Management help you navigate your way to retirement. We provide comprehensive, thoughtful, and personal retirement planning. Call Financial Sense Wealth Management now at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. Start your journey to retiring well today. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
One of the things that we try to do in our annual forecast issue is we try to talk about big picture items, you know, so I'm not going to sit here and tell you our forecast for the year is the S&P hits 4,200, 4,300, the unemployment rate drops to 3, and, you know, interest rates go to 1.5%. What we like to talk about are things that are going to influence the economy, the markets, and direction and influence how you should be investing. And one of the things I want to start out with, obviously, we've got a lot of news, whether it's the election, the inauguration. I mean, as we're sitting right now, we've got 20,000 National Guard troops in Washington, D.C. We almost look like a banana republic. And just as a reference point, that's more troops than we have in Afghanistan and Iraq. So imagine 20,000 National Guard troops in our nation's capital. But what I want to reflect back on is a book that came out a number of years ago. It was called The Fourth Turning by Strauss and Howe. It's about cycles in American history that last about the length of a human life. And I want to just give you a sort of a summary. What is The Fourth Turning? and it's about the social cycles that occur repeatedly throughout history. The first turning comes a high. It's a period of confident expansion as a new order takes root after the old has been swept away. Next, in the second turning, comes the awakening, a time of spiritual exploration and rebellion against the now established order. Think of the 60s. Then comes an unraveling, an increasing troubled era in which individualism triumphs over crumbling institutions. Think of the last couple of decades, especially the 80s and 90s. Last comes a crisis, which is where we are now. And that is the fourth turning, when society passes through a great and perilous gate in history. And together, the four turnings comprise history's seasonal rhythm of growth, maturation, entropy, and rebirth. And so, Chris, that's exactly where we are right now. And I think he's been pretty spot on. If you take a look at what we've gone through over, gosh, just the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, it's amazing. I remember when we talked with him on FS Insider not too long ago about some of the things that he wrote in the fourth turning. I mean, I think they even forecasted the possibility of a very large global pandemic as part of that. So, I mean, they really talked about a number of different things that would rattle America from this period of starting in 2020 out to around 2030, the period that we're in now. And we are seeing that on the news almost daily, it seems like.
Yeah, and what we're looking at right now and what we're going to be talking about are trends that we think are going to last throughout the 20 decade. And what you're seeing right now, and this gets into this period of perilous gate in history that Strauss and Howe talk about. Now, you just think of what we saw in 2020, the riots, the looting, and then also recently what just occurred in the Capitol, and what you're going to see on television next Tuesday, where there's going to be 20,000 troops, military troops, in the nation's capital. Once again, more troops than we have entirely in Afghanistan or Iraq. And unfortunately, Chris, you know, the election was based on President-elect Biden promised unity. But the first thing starting out in his presidency is impeaching his predecessor. And it's going to do nothing but inflame public sentiment. And I can't think of, you know, you hear this comment often in the news, we have never seen the country this divided. We'd probably have to go back to the Civil War. And what is at stake here is a debate that the country's having of socialism versus capitalism. And that is at the very center here. And you're going to see this, and it kind of harkens back, Chris, when I think back of the 60s, where we saw a lot of violence during that period. We had protests over the Vietnam War. We had Black Panthers, the shooting at Kent State of college students, the Chicago 7 riots with the Democratic Convention. And we had all of this conflict, and then it kind of just went away. And we had a very prosperous, or what we call the awakening period, which was probably the 80s and 90s. And then, of course, we saw how we began the OO decade with the events of 9/11 and how that changed so many things. And now we have something that's even, which is very dangerous. It was supposed to be good, but social media, which leads to mob rule. And we're entering a very dangerous period of time where you can lose your job. You can get ostracized. You can be prevented from flying on airplanes based on mob interpretation of what you said or what they thought you said and their interpretation. The problem is, as you look at these polls, is the public is losing confidence in our institutions, including democracy. And Chris, for the first time, you're hearing some state politicians talking about secession from the country. And also you hear talks about civil war. So there's a widespread division, within political parties, and it could accelerate. And one of the things that we're seeing is there are two bills that are being introduced. Actually, it could be three. One is H.R. 1, introduced by Speaker Pelosi. And what it would do, it would do the three things the Democrats wanted to do if they took power. One, make Washington, D.C., the 51st state in the country, which would give them two Democratic senators. Number two, make Puerto Rico a 52nd state. And already, H.R. 1, there's a provision that would make Washington, D.C., the 51st state in the country. And then also, H.R. 1 would impose California-style election rules nationwide that would override state legislatures. So this is going to be a period of what I think is going to be a lot of conflict and turmoil. And I don't need to remind you of that. All you have to do is turn on your evening news. And, you know, people are going to see something they haven't seen in this country in their lifetime, especially what we just went through with the pandemic. Next week, you're going to see something you haven't seen, and that's military troops in our nation's capital.
It's really interesting, Jim, because, you know, I think that we all are disgusted by what we saw at the Capitol Hill building and the vandalism and the breaking in and all that. I don't think many Americans are proud of what we saw there, but then the reaction to it, if you're bringing in all those troops when Biden is being inaugurated, it's almost going to look like a military coup or military takeover if they're going to be lining the streets. I guess we'll have to see how many troops are actually there, but it's just a fascinating series of events. And you know, one interesting anecdote here that I think is ties in really well to what you're talking about being censored. Jim, did you know that I got censored by Facebook probably about a year or two ago, a long time before a lot of the current censorship was going on? Did you know that?
Mm-mm. For what?
Well, so I have a personal blog where I talk about a lot of the ways in which algorithms run our lives and the dangers of when we hand over our lives to algorithms. It's not even political. It's just talking about technology. And guess what? Facebook blocked me about a year or two ago. So I guess that's just irony right there.
Well, you're hitting at something that's key. They run their program on algorithms. And you're talking about how that basically influences our lives. And so, but you're going to see more of that. Sandy Cortez, known as AOC, is also going to introduce legislation and establish a government committee to oversee media. In other words, state-controlled media. So it's going to be interesting to see how all of this plays out.
So, Jim, I think the main message here, this first point we're really trying to make, is that we are going through a fourth turning. I think that much is obvious. If any of you have not read the book or listened to the interview that we did with Neil Howe on our show, certainly recommend at least familiarizing yourself with the material of the turnings, because that's what we're seeing and that's what we're probably likely going to continue seeing for the next 10 years. Part of this process, which is going to be the next subject, is the fact that in some ways we're going to see a lot of the same forces that we saw during the 70s, as you've touched upon earlier, Jim, one of which is inflation.
Yeah, that's one of our key themes for this decade is the return of inflation. And so what we want to cover next is why we didn't have inflation in the 00 decade and the last decade, and specifically why we're more likely to see inflation return in this decade.
One of the interesting topics that we've discussed in the past is the fact that we did not see the levels of inflation that were predicted. And, you know, there were a number of people that we used to have on our show going back to after the financial crisis with the massive amount of quantitative easing that was being launched by the Fed. There were some that were predicting hyperinflation. We didn't see any of that. So why did we not see it then? And why are we likely to see it this time around?
Yeah, most people think when the Fed prints money, we're going to see massive inflation. And there were a lot of predictions coming out of the financial crisis, when the Fed really expanded its balance sheet from about $700 billion to $4.6 trillion. Well, why didn't we have inflation? Well, you have to understand, when money is created, it has three outlets. It can stay in cash, stay in the bank, in which case money velocity declines. Secondly, it can go into the economy, driving up the cost of goods and services, which is inflationary. Basically, what we saw in the latter part of the 60s and 70s, or the third outlet is financial markets. And if you take a look at the last 00 decade or even the tech bubble, a lot of that money creation went into the financial markets as another outlet. And certainly if you look at some of the valuations in the market, which we'll get into here shortly, one could argue things like Tesla or Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies are a bubble. So there's three outlets, and most of that money over the last two decades found its way into the financial markets. The other thing is much of the money that was created in the last decade stayed on the Fed's balance sheet. Banks weren't making those loans. Remember when you come out of a financial crisis where the bank's balance sheet, there was a lot of losses that came out. And that's why the Fed came in. They started buying treasuries to reliquify the banking system. They were buying troubled mortgages to get them off the balance sheet of these banks. So that's why that money, if you're a bank, and basically you're bankrupt. If you add all the losses on loans that you've made compared to your net worth, you know, you're not about to go out on a credit creating spree. And that's why credit creation in the last decade was very slow. The other thing is, one of the things that, and this we're going to get into why we think inflation is coming. One of the things that impacted inflation in the 70s was the cost of labor. Labor unions were much stronger in the 70s than where they are today. Union membership has fallen. But there were three aspects on the demographic front that really changed inflation dynamics. And that is the introduction of a larger pool of labor. What happened in the 70s? Mom and women went to work. So you had this whole new pool of women coming into the workforce. Secondly, as globalization took off in the 80s, 90s, 00 decade, you also had Chinese labor, Indian labor, Asian labor that came in. And what happened is that kept wages low and the cost of labor contained. And we're going to come back to this, why a reversal in that is going to be one of the factors driving inflation. So you had this massive influx into the labor markets, keeping wages low, suppressing them. And then the third factor was globalization. What happened at the end of the 70s and 80s, 90s? Companies moved their manufacturing facilities offshore where they could build items cheaper. A good example is Apple. Apple is based in Silicon Valley. The marketing, the design work, the engineering is done in California, but the manufacturing is done in China. And it's not just Apple, it's car companies. Just go to Costco and take a look at the items you buy and take a look at where they're bought or where they're made. Chances are they probably come from China. And then the fourth factor was technological innovation. The advent of computers, the internet, AI, and robotics. If you look at a factory floor today, whether you're looking at Tesla or Volkswagen, you know, it's not Larry Moe and Curly on the assembly line putting on the bumper. It's some guy in a lab coat operating a $25 million robot. So that brought down the cost of making things and kept inflation in check. So those were a number of factors, and probably the key one was demographics, globalization. Because with demographics, with a larger labor pool, you know, it's like anything else. If you have a whole bunch of labor, well, labor is in a weaker position to bargain with employers. That's going to be reversing in this decade, which is going to be good news for laborers. It's not going to be good news on the inflation front.
Okay, so in sum, Jim, as you said, you know, we saw globalization was one major force that has helped to depress prices. By some measures, if you look, it appears that globalization is in reverse, or at least we're seeing the benefits of globalization start to reverse, and we're seeing more of this relocalization or reshoring effort underway. The coronavirus has certainly accelerated that process. And there's a lot of other forces that come together. Automation as one, which has helped to keep prices low. But in this case, for the 2020s now, we're looking at a different trend taking place. And we've already started to see, if you look at the inflation measures, we're starting to see a lot of price pressure coming up in certain places. We're certainly seeing prices move higher in the stock market, in housing prices, and in asset prices. But we're also now starting to see it in the goods sector as well.
We're seeing it in the goods sector. You know, we're seeing this reversal of globalization. But Chris, one of the key things that's going to drive inflation, and this is a very big macro event, and that's an aging population. There's going to be fewer workers. So this cycle of low wages and weak labor is about to change this decade as we age with fewer workers. And we're seeing this in China, China's one-child policy. And the other thing that's really impacting China is in China, they favored male children. And so there are more males in China than there are females. That creates a problem if in terms of population. In other words, we're not replacing ourselves. You know, people are having one child instead of two. So you see it in China. You're seeing it in Europe. The U.S. is probably better off because of our immigration policies. But we're going to see also higher proportions of young and old. And those are the two that spend a lot on goods. The young on goods and things they need. The old on medical, which medical costs are a major factor of inflation. Also, this is something that we covered. I'm trying to think, Chris, it was about 3 or 4 years ago. We did a show called The Land of the Giants. And what this was, it was talking about this concentration of corporate power. And that is, you're seeing these oligopolies and monopolies rise. And it we'll get into this when we look at the Gilded Age versus the technological age. But as companies consolidate, what does that do? It gets rid of competition. So let's say you've got, whether it's an airplane manufacturer, whether it's a medical company, you start buying out your competition. And we're going to give you a couple examples of that. So growing corporate concentration leads to oligopolies and monopolies. Just take a look at, if you want to look at big box stores, the main ones, Costco, Target, and Walmart. The other thing that you're seeing here is one of the things, as I talked about earlier, when money is created, it has three outlets, stays in cash, goes into the economy, or it can go into the financial markets. Well, if you take a look at what the government is doing, and this the Biden administration is going to introduce a $2 trillion stimulus package, $350 bailout for mismanaged states like California, Illinois, New Jersey, and New York, but also money that they're going to give to workers. So the $600 that came with the first stimulus package that was passed, and then the new one would be an additional $1,400. So the government is going to give people $2,000. Well, what is that? That's the government injecting money directly into the economy with the Fed coming in, mopping it up, and printing the money to pay for it. Now, we'll talk about why that is inflationary. Also, the rise of populism and the reduction of the workforce. One of the problems that this is going to create, Chris, is the displaced workers are then supported by welfare, unemployment, or the new trend and the new buzzword is universal guaranteed income. Washington is talking about a $2,000 a month guaranteed income for every individual. Where's the money going to come from? Who's going to pay for that? And then something we will get into over the next probably month or two, we'll cover a little bit of it today. By mid-decade, we're predicting we're going to see a major energy shock with the price of oil. And then later on in the decade, you're going to see a debt reset as the U.S. approaches $40 to $50 trillion
and national debt, eventually that's going to lead to a major devaluation of the dollar.
Jim, earlier you were talking about land of the giants and the massive amount of consolidation that we've seen among large retailers, among stores, even among media as well, right? I mean, if there's this illusion of choice that you are selecting from all these different products or services, and really it's only a handful of companies that own all of these different brands in many cases. How does that relate to, as we've discussed in the past, you know, this gilded age?
You know, there's a great program that would, it was a series, a docudrama that came out on the History Channel called The Men Who Built America. And then there was another documentary called The Gilded Age. And if you take a look at the men that built America, they talked about J.P. Morgan, Andrew Carnegie, John D. Rockefeller. What did these robber barons have in common? What they did is they hated competition. And what they did is they consolidated. They bought out their competition or they put them out of business. For example, Standard Oil. John D. Rockefeller, if you were operating a refinery oil field, he'd come in and offer to buy you, and you would get Standard Oil stock. If you didn't go along with Standard Oil buying you, they'd basically shut you down and put you out of business. Same thing with J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan came in, consolidated the railroads. Andrew Carnegie consolidated steel. Well, fast forward to the tech robber barons. What are they doing? Take a look at Facebook. Take a look at Twitter. Take a look at Google. Take a look at Apple. You just simply buy out your competition. And that's what these social media companies have done. If there's an app or a program that competes with them, they simply buy it out. Or you simply put them out of business, as the, you know, everybody saw what happened last weekend where Apple and Google, which are oligopolies, Apple and Google control 98% of all the apps for phones. Well, Apple and Google took Parler as their number one app. They took it off their platform. The next day, Amazon, which is the number one cloud provider in the world, took Parler off. Because, I mean, if you think about it, they kicked the president off. Rush Limbaugh left. A lot of the conservatives were leaving Twitter and going to Parler. Well, that's direct competition to Twitter. And so Twitter really made a disastrous decision that had to be countered, which is what happened. They just simply took Parler off the App Store, and then also they took them off the internet service. So, you know, you can't get Parler right now. They're working on getting another service provider. But this is an action very similar to what Rockefeller did, very similar to what Carnegie did or J.P. Morgan. And another key thing is when we talked about the land of the giants, I talked about this massive consolidation that we were getting down to. There's basically 1,400 countries or companies in the world that control global GDP. Of those 1,400 companies, 80% of them are Western, and of that 80% Western, 80% are U.S. What happens when consolidation takes place? You get rid of your competition, which enables you to have better pricing power. Your margins go up. Your return on equity goes up. If you want to understand Warren Buffett, this is something I learned from reading Buffett. He's a monopolist, an oligopolist. Buffett talks about companies that have a moat that protects their business in terms of pricing. And what is that? Well, how do you get to that? You consolidate. And it makes it easier to raise prices. And a good example, this is continuing. Just this week alone, Staples is seeking to buy Office Depot, this which is Staples' main competitor. Now, this is going to be their third attempt. The first two were turned down by the Justice Department. But this one, they're arguing, hey, we got to compete with Amazon that's in office products. So this one could possibly go through. If you look at medical devices, Steris PLC is buying Cantel Medical, and that is consolidating the industry in a specific sector of healthcare. So you're seeing more and more of this take place. And the Justice Department has allowed this. There have been more takeovers. And you can see this in the Wilshire 5000. There's no longer 5,000 stocks out there. So if you look at the Russell indexes, there are fewer and fewer companies as these companies get bought out, as industry after industry consolidates into a handful of key oligopolies.
So Jim, in summing up, the reason why you believe that we are going to see inflation return this decade in the 2020s versus what we've seen in the past. We have an aging population and it's a demographic issue. We also have growing concentration among companies. That's less competition. So that's also going to lend towards higher prices. We have direct government injections of money into people's bank accounts, into the economy directly. And another factor, which is our next topic, is an energy shock by mid-decade.
Yeah, this one I think is going to surprise a lot of our listeners. And one of the things, this is all based on energy in science. Green energy, as we are currently pursuing it, is extremely inefficient. And let me give you an example of this. This was taken from a hedge fund report that came out recently. A single electric car battery that weighs 1,000 pounds requires 500 pounds of materials. 100 barrels of oil are being used to make a battery that, when it gets done, can only store the equivalent of one barrel of energy. So, Chris, we're using 100 barrels to create one barrel of energy. That just doesn't work. Secondly, most oil we consume today comes from wells that were discovered well over half a century ago. And right now, depletion rates are running 7%. Now, if you're not familiar with depletion, it means that as a company, an oil company pumps oil out of a well, eventually that well is going to go dry. And depletion means that your production drops. So the production is dropping around 7% a year, which means you have to replace what you're producing just to stay even. According to Woods Mackenzie, upstream investments have dropped to a 15-year low at $300 billion. That's roughly a drop of 32% in 2020. The peak of oil exploration and expenditures was 2014. We haven't been back there. The IEA and several agencies have said, if we want to avoid an energy crunch or crisis, we need to ramp up investments to replace a lot of these older oil fields, which are depleting rapidly. A good example I can give you that is Mexico had the second largest oil field, Cantarell. It went dry. And what happened is, as it went dry, that changed the politics of Mexico. They had to open up exploration in their territories to Western oil companies because they didn't have the money. They had to replace a major oil field by drilling and trying to find its replacement. And just to stay even, we need the equivalent of almost 6 or 7 Saudi Arabias. And the other problem is fossil fuel supply. If you take a look at renewable energy, we need 5 times the amount of fossil fuel production just to handle the manufacturing of making renewable energy, whether we're making windmills, solar panels. The other thing, too, is if you take a look at governments doing, they're making it very tough. This we'll see with the Biden administration as they go all green. Well, they're going to try to implement what they call their Green New Deal. So the oil industry is switching because of these problems, and especially with what we've seen with the pricing of oil over the last 6 years, with the Saudi oil war that began in 2014, then unfortunately with what happened to oil demand with COVID. So these are short term. What happens, though, as a result of it, the oil industry has switched from these long-term, major costly projects to short-term projects like shale, where you get a quick payback. But the problem with shale is they basically run out within 2 years. You get the bulkier production in the first 2 years. And then what you have to do is you have to keep drilling. And so it's kind of like being on a treadmill where the speed of that treadmill keeps increasing every single year. And if you also, another thing that we do, which someday we're going to look at this and say, what were they thinking, is the largest oil companies are selling off assets. You've got Wall Street with hedge funds that are going into major companies. They're trying to do this with Exxon and say, get rid of your oil assets and go more green, kind of like what we're seeing with British Petroleum. Exxon has been penalized for what their basic goal has been, is to expand oil production. Their goal was to double it. They made one of the largest oil discoveries off the coast of Ghana, 8 billion barrels of oil. But that's not what government and the financial industry wants from oil companies. They're saying, get rid of your oil, start producing green energy. And that's going to come back, Chris, to bite us. And, you know, everybody's saying, well, we're going to peak demand. They're saying peak demand for oil will end in 2030. Let's face it, folks, you're not going to get a jet up in the air on solar panels. It's still going to be jet fuel. And the more we shut down our energy industry or try to exert control and change it from a government point of view, the greater control and power OPEC will end up having. It's kind of like some of the dumb things we do in California. We shut down our nuclear power plants, but California buys its needed energy from Arizona because Arizona has two nuclear power plants. Or the same thing that Germany did is they buy their power from France, which 75% of the power in France comes from nuclear energy. So these are some of the things that we're starting to see that, Chris, that we see a major energy crisis by mid-decade, and that's going to be inflationary. So that'll be the final nail in the coffin for the return of inflation.
We started off talking about the fourth turning, and in that case, we're going to continue to see a bit of disruption, a bit of turmoil. We should expect that to happen and to continue to take place as we see on the evening news almost every day. Part of that, as we mentioned, is going to be a return of inflation. A lot of the forces that we saw that kept a lid on inflation are now reversing. So how does that tie into the way our listeners should be thinking about investing going forward for this decade?
Well, we think we're about ready to enter a commodity super cycle. I don't care if it's precious metals like gold and silver. And by the way, silver is very green. You can't have solar panels without silver. Copper as well. You want to talk about electric batteries and electric cars, they require copper, and copper is in deficit. Nickel. Oil. So a super cycle for commodities, just like we saw it in the 00 decade, we're going to see it return in this decade and be even more crucial. And especially if we're trying to go green, you want to put all this, you know, you want to make windmills, solar panels, electric cars. All of that requires, as I mentioned, raw materials, nickel, copper. That's why you saw Elon Musk basically go to mining companies and say, look, you guys need to start mining nickel. I need that to make the cars. Also, with the Fed and many central banks hell-bent on keeping interest rates down, they're going to have to because we are approaching $30 trillion in debt as a country. We're talking about maybe $3 to $4 trillion of stimulus coming this year. As we mentioned, the consensus is our budget deficit is going to be almost 10% of GDP. I mean, it could be even bigger than last year. Last year was $3.1 trillion. They're talking about, depending on the size of the stimulus, it could be $3 to $4 trillion this year. I also think, and you're seeing this now, value over growth. As people look at the market, things that are overpriced, whether you're looking at certain tech stocks, social media stocks, you're seeing that shift into value by investors. And then also technology. Technology has been one of the strongest sectors of the market. I still see technology as being strong going forward. We're not going to stop inventing and proving things. One good example is just take a look at all the products that are being invented, whether it's health, exercise, communication, coming out of the Consumer Electronics Show, which, by the way, this year was all virtual. So commodities, dividend-paying aristocrats, value over growth, and select technology. And we're going to be covering a lot more of this in the weeks ahead as we take a look at how to invest over this next decade.
Well, one of the things that's a hallmark of how we invest here at Financial Sense Wealth Management is identifying the key trends, and those trends which tend to last not just months, but years, if not up to decades. And as many of our listeners know that have been listening to us for a long time, Jim, you know, you thought the tech bubble would collapse in 2000, as it did. You talked about moving into foreign bonds and into commodities in the early 2000s, riding that all the way up, and especially about making big investments into the wider commodity energy space. These are all long-term trends, and that's what we're trying to do here, is to educate you, our listeners, about these trends and how they're likely to unfold. So, Jim, with that said, what is the best way for our listeners to contact us at Financial Sense Wealth Management to speak with our advisors or to learn about any of the other investment services that we offer?
They can call us toll-free at 888-486-3939, and one of our advisors would be more than glad to talk to you, whether it's investment or financial planning needs. But in the meantime, on behalf of Chris Sheridan and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense News Hour. We want to wish you once again a happy, prosperous, and safe new year.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.